Teenage Wasteland by Anne Tyler. He used to have very blonde hair, almost white, cut shorter than other children's, so that on his crown a little cowlick always stood up to catch the light. But this was when he was small. As he grew older, his hair grew darker, and he wore it longer, past his collar even. It hung in lank, taffy-colored ropes around his face, which was still an endearing face, fine-featured, the eyes an unusual aqua-blue. But his cheeks, of course, were no longer round, and a sharp new Adam's apple jogged in his throat when he talked. In October, they called from the private school he attended to request a conference with his parents. Daisy went alone. Her husband was at work. Clutching her purse, she sat on the principal's couch and learned that Donnie was noisy, lazy, and disruptive, always fooling around with his friends, and he wouldn't respond in class. In the past, before her children were born, Daisy had been a fourth-grade teacher. It shamed her now to sit before this principal as a parent, a delinquent parent, a parent who struck Mr. Lanham, no doubt, as unseeing or uncaring. "It isn't that we're not concerned," she said. "Both of us are, and we've done what we could, whatever we could think of. We don't let him watch TV on school nights. We don't let him talk on the phone till he's finished his homework. But he tells us he doesn't have any homework, or he did it all in study hall. How are we to know what to believe?" From early October through November, at Mr. Lanham's suggestion, Daisy checked Donnie's assignments every day. She sat next to him as he worked, trying to be encouraging, sagging inwardly as she saw the poor quality of everything he did, the sloppy mistakes in math, the illogical leaps in his English themes, the history questions left blank if they required any research. Daisy was often late starting supper, and she couldn't give as much attention to Donnie's younger sister. "You'll never guess what happened at..." Amanda would begin, and Daisy would have to tell her, "Not now, honey." By the time her husband Matt came home, she'd be snappish. She would recite the day's hardships, the fuzzy instructions in English, the botched history map, the morass of unsolvable algebra equations. Matt would look surprised and confused, and Daisy would gradually wind down. There was no way, really, to convey how exhausting all this was. In December, the school called again. This time, they wanted Matt to come as well. She and Matt had to sit on Mr. Lanham's couch, like two bad children, and listen to the news. Donnie had improved only slightly, raising a D in history to a C, and a C in algebra to a B-. What was worse, he had developed new problems. He had cut classes on at least three occasions, smoked in the furnace room, helped Sonny Barnett break into a freshman's locker, and last week, during athletics, he and three friends had been seen off the school grounds. When they returned, the coach had smelled beer on their breath. Daisy and Matt sat silent, shocked. Matt rubbed his forehead with his fingertips. Imagine, Daisy thought, how they must look to Mr. Lanham, an overweight housewife in a cotton dress and a too-tall-too-thin insurance agent in a baggy frayed suit. Failures, both of them. The kind of people who are always hurrying to catch up, missing the point of things that everyone else grasps at once. She'd wished she'd worn nylons instead of knee socks. It was arranged that Donnie would visit a psychiatrist for testing. Mr. Lanham knew just the person. He would set this boy straight, he said. When they stood to leave, Daisy held her stomach in and gave Mr. Lanham a firm, responsible handshake. Donnie said the psychiatrist was a jackass, and the tests were really dumb, but he kept all three of his appointments, and when it was time for the follow-up conference with the psychologist and both parents, Donnie combed his hair and seemed unusually sober and subdued. The psychologist said Donnie had no serious emotional problems. He was merely going through a difficult period in his life. He required some academic help and a better sense of self-worth. For this reason, he was suggesting a man named Calvin Beadle, a tutor, and with a considerable psychological training. In the car going home, Donnie said he'd be damned if he'd let them drag him to some stupid fairy tutor. His father told him to watch his language in front of his mother. That night Daisy lay awake, pondering the term self-worth. She had always been free with her praise. She had always told Donnie he had talent, was smart, was good with his hands. She had made a big to-do over every little gift he gave her. In fact, maybe she had gone too far, although Lord knows she had meant every word. Was that his trouble? She remembered when Amanda was born. Donnie had acted lost and bewildered. Daisy had been alert to that, of course, but still, a new baby keeps you so busy. Had she really done all she could have? She longed, she ached for a time machine. Given one more chance, she'd do it perfectly, hug him more, praise him more, or perhaps praise him less. Oh, who can say? The tutor told Donnie to call him Cal. All his kids did, he said. Daisy thought for a second that he meant his own children. Then she realized her mistake. He seemed too young, anyhow, to be a family man. He wore a heavy brown handlebar mustache. His hair was as long and stringy as Donnie's, and his jeans as faded. Wire-rimmed spectacles slid down his nose. He lounged in a canvas director's chair with his fingers laced across his chest, and he casually, amiably, questioned Donnie, who sat upright and glaring in an armchair. "So, they're getting on your back at school," Cal said, "making a big deal about anything you do wrong."
"Right," said Donnie.
"Any idea why that would be?"
"Oh, well, you know, stuff like homework and all," Donnie said.
"You don't do your homework?"
Well, I might do it sometimes, but not just exactly like they want it."
Donnie sat forward and said, "It's like a prison there, you know. You've got to go to every class. You can never step off the school grounds."
"You cut classes sometimes?"
"Sometimes," Donnie said, with a glance at his parents. Cal didn't seem perturbed. "Well," he said, "I'll tell you what. Let's you and me try working together 3 nights a week. Think you could handle that? We'll see if we can show that school of yours a thing or two. Give it a month. Then, if you don't like it, we'll stop. If I don't like it, we'll stop. I mean, sometimes people just don't get along, right? What do you say to that?"
"Okay," Donnie said. He seemed pleased.
"Make it 7 o'clock till 8, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday," Cal told Matt and Daisy. They nodded. Cal shambled to his feet, gave them a little salute, and showed them to the door. This was where he lived as well as worked, evidently. The interview had taken place in the dining room, which had been transformed into a kind of office. Passing the living room, Daisy winced at the rock music she had been hearing, without registering it, ever since she had entered the house. She looked in and saw a boy about Donnie's age lying on a sofa with a book. Another boy and a girl were playing ping-pong in front of the fireplace. "You have several here together?" Daisy asked Cal. "Oh, sometimes they stay on after their sessions, just to rap. They're a pretty sociable group, all in all. Plenty of goof-offs like young Donnie here." He cuffed Donnie's shoulder playfully. Donnie flushed and grinned. Climbing into the car, Daisy asked Donnie, "Well, what did you think?" But Donnie had returned to his old evasive self. He jerked his chin toward the garage. "Look," he said, "he's got a basketball net." Now, on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, they had supper early, the instant Matt came home. Sometimes they had to leave before they were really finished. Amanda would still be eating her dessert. "Bye, honey. Sorry," Daisy would tell her. Cal's first bill sent a flutter of panic through Daisy's chest, but it was worth it, of course. Just look at Donnie's face when they picked him up, alight and full of interest. The principal telephoned Daisy to tell her how Donnie had improved. Of course, it hasn't shown up in his grades yet, but several of the teachers have noticed how his attitude's changed. Yes, sir, I think we're onto something here. At home, Donnie didn't act much differently. He still seemed to have a low opinion of his parents, but Daisy supposed that was unavoidable, part of being 15. He said his parents were too controlling, a word that made Daisy give him a sudden look. He said they acted like wardens. On weekends, they enforced a curfew, and any time he went to a party, they always telephoned first to see if adults would be supervising.
"For God's sake," he said, "don't you trust me?" "It isn't a matter of trust, honey." But there was no explaining to him. His tutor called one afternoon. "I get the sense," he said, "that this kid's feeling underestimated, you know? Like you folks expect the worst of him. I'm thinking we ought to give him more rope." "But, see, he's still so suggestible," Daisy said. "When his friend suggests some mischief, smoking or drinking or such, why, he just finds it hard not to go along with them." "Mrs. Coble," the tutor said, "I think this kid is hurting. You know, he's a serious, sensitive kid, telling you he'd like to take on some grown-up challenges, and you're giving him the message that he can't be trusted. Don't you understand how that hurts?"
"Oh," said Daisy, "it undermines his self-esteem. Don't you realize that?"
"Well, I guess you're right," said Daisy. She saw Donnie suddenly from a whole new angle. His pathetically poor posture, that slouch so forlorn that his shoulders seemed about to meet his chin. Oh, wasn't it awful being young? She'd had a miserable adolescence herself, and had always sworn no child of hers would ever be that unhappy. They let Donnie stay out later. They didn't call ahead to see if the parties were supervised, and they were careful not to grill him about his evening. The tutor had set down so many rules. They were not allowed any questions at all about any aspect of school, nor were they to speak with his teachers. If a teacher had some complaint, she should phone Cal. Only one teacher disobeyed, the history teacher, Miss Evans. She called one morning in February. "I'm a little concerned about Donnie, Mrs. Coble." "Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Evans, but Donnie's tutor handles these things now." "I always deal directly with the parents. You are the parent," Miss Evans said, speaking very slowly and distinctly. "Now, here is the problem. Back when you were helping Donnie with his homework, his grades rose from a D to a C. But now they've slipped back, and they're closer to an F."
"They are?
I think you should start overseeing his homework again."
"But Donnie's tutor says..."
"It's nice that Donnie has a tutor, but you should still be in charge of his homework. With you, he learned it. Then he passed his tests. With the tutor, well, it seems the tutor is more of a crutch. Donnie, I say, a quiz is coming up on Friday. Hadn't you better be listening instead of talking?"
"That's okay, Miss Evans," he says. "I have a tutor now. Like a talisman. I really think you ought to take over, Mrs. Coble."
"I see," said Daisy. "Well, I'll think about that. Thank you for calling." Hanging up, she felt a rush of anger at Donnie. A talisman? For a talisman, she'd given up all luxuries, all that time with her daughter, her evenings at home. She dialed Cal's number. He sounded muzzy. "I'm sorry if I woke you," she told him, "but Donnie's history teacher just called. She said he isn't doing well. She should have dealt with me. She wants me to start supervising his homework again. His grades are slipping."
"Yes," said the tutor, "but you and I both know there's more to it than mere grades, don't we? I care about the whole child, his happiness, his self-esteem. The grades will come. Just give them time."
When she hung up, it was Miss Evans she was angry at. What a narrow woman! It was Cal this, Cal that, Cal says this, Cal and I did that. Cal lent Donnie an album by the Who. He took Donnie and two other pupils to a rock concert. In March, when Donnie began to talk endlessly on the phone with a girl named Miriam, Cal even let Miriam come to one of the tutoring sessions. Daisy was touched that Cal would grow so involved in Donnie's life, but she was also a little hurt, because she had offered to have Miriam to dinner, and Donnie had refused. Now he asked them to drive her to Cal's house without a qualm. This Miriam was an unappealing girl with blurry lipstick and masses of rough red hair. She wore a short, bulky jacket that would not have been out of place on a motorcycle. During the trip to Cal's, she was silent, but coming back, she was talkative.
"What a neat guy, and what a house! All those kids hanging out like a club, and the stereo playing rock. Gosh, he's not like a grown-up at all. Married and divorced and everything, but you'd think he was our age."
Mr. Beadle was married? Daisy asked.
Yeah,
to this real controlling lady. She didn't understand him a bit.
No, I guess not, Daisy said.
Spring came, and the students who hung around at Cal's drifted out to the basketball net above the garage. Sometimes, when Daisy and Matt arrived to pick up Donnie, they'd find him there with the others, spiky and excited, jittering on his toes beneath the backboard. It was staying light much longer now, and the neighboring fence cast narrow bars across the bright grass. Loud music would be spilling from Cal's windows. Once it was The Who, which Daisy recognized from the time that Donnie had borrowed the album. "Teenage Wasteland," she said aloud, identifying the song, and Matt gave a short, dry laugh.
"It certainly is," he said.
He'd misunderstood. He thought she was commenting on the scene spread before them. In fact, she might have been. The players looked like hoodlums, even her son. Why, one of Cal's students had recently been knifed in a tavern. One had been shipped off to a boarding school in midterm. Two had been withdrawn by their parents. On the other hand, Donnie had mentioned someone who'd been studying with Cal for 5 years.
5 years, said Daisy. Doesn't anyone ever stop needing him?
Donnie looked at her. Lately, whatever she said about Cal was read as criticism.
You're just feeling competitive, he said, and controlling.
She bit her lip and said no more. In April, the principal called to tell her that Donnie had been expelled. There had been a locker check, and in Donnie's locker they found 5 cans of beer and 1/2 pack of cigarettes. With Donnie's previous record, this offense meant expulsion. Daisy gripped the receiver tightly and said,
"Well, where is he now?"
"We've sent him home," said Mr. Lanham. "He's packed up all his belongings, and he's coming home on foot." Daisy wondered what she would say to him. She felt him looming closer and closer, bringing this brand-new situation that no one had prepared her to handle. What other place would take him? Could they enter him in public school? What were the rules? She stood at the living-room window, waiting for him to show up. Gradually, she realized that he was taking too long. She checked the clock. She stared up the street again. When an hour had passed, she phoned the school. Mr. Lanham's secretary answered and told her in a grave, sympathetic voice that yes, Donnie Coble had most definitely gone home. Daisy called her husband. He was out of the office. She went back to the window and thought a while, and then she called Donnie's tutor. "Donnie's been expelled from school," she said, "and now I don't know where he's gone. I wonder if you've heard from him." There was a long silence. "Donnie's with me, Mrs. Coble," he finally said.
"With you? How'd he get there?"
"He hailed a cab, and I paid the driver." "Could I speak to him, please?" There was another silence.
"Maybe it would be better if we had a conference," Cal said.
"I don't want a conference. I've been standing at the window picturing him dead or kidnapped or something, and now you tell me you want a—"
"Donnie is very, very upset. Understandably so. Believe me, Mrs. Coble, this is not what it seems. Have you asked Donnie's side of the story?"
"Well, of course not. How could I? He went running off to you instead."
"Because he didn't feel he'd be listened to." "But I haven't even—"
"Why don't you come out and talk? The three of us," said Cal. "We'll try to get this thing in perspective."
"Well, all right," Daisy said, but she wasn't as reluctant as she sounded. Already she felt soothed by the calm way Cal was taking this.
Cal answered the doorbell at once. He said, "Hi there," and led her into the dining room. Donnie sat slumped in a chair, chewing the knuckle of one thumb.
"Hello, Donnie," Daisy said.
He flicked his eyes in her direction. "Sit here, Mrs. Coble," said Cal, placing her opposite Donnie. He himself remained standing, restlessly pacing.
"So," he said.
Daisy stole a look at Donnie. His lips were swollen, as if he'd been crying.
"You know," Cal told Daisy, "I kind of expected something like this. There's a very punitive school you've got him in. You realize that. And any half-decent lawyer will tell you they've violated his civil rights. Locker checks. Where's their search warrant?"
"But if the rule is," Daisy said. "Well, anyhow, let him tell you his side."
She looked at Donnie. He said,
"It wasn't my fault. I promise."
"They said your locker was full of beer." It was a put-up job. See, there's this guy that doesn't like me. He put all those beers in my locker and started a rumor going, so Mr. Lanham ordered a locker check.
What was the boy's name?
Daisy asked.
Huh?
Mrs. Coble, take my word, the situation is not so unusual, Cal said. You can't imagine how vindictive kids can be sometimes.
What was the boy's name? Said Daisy, so that I can ask
Mr. Lanham if that's who suggested he run the locker check.
You don't believe me, Donnie said.
And how'd this boy get your combination in the first place?
Frankly, said Cal, I wouldn't be surprised to learn the school was in on it. Any kid that marches to a different drummer, why, they'd just love an excuse to get rid of him. The school is where I laid the blame.
Doesn't Donnie ever get blamed?
Now, Mrs. Coble, you heard what he...
Forget it, Donnie told Cal. You can see she doesn't trust me.
Daisy drew in a breath to say that, of course, she trusted him, a reflex. But she knew that bold-faced, wide-eyed look of Donnie's. He had worn that look when he was small, denying some petty misdeed with the evidence plain as day all around him. Still, it was hard for her to accuse him outright. She temporized and said,
"The only thing I'm sure of is that they've kicked you out of school, and now I don't know what we're going to do."
"We'll fight it," said Cal.
"We can't. Even you must see we can't."
"I could apply to Brantley," Donnie said.
Cal stopped his pacing to beam down at him.
"Brantley, yes. They're really on to where a kid is coming from at Brantley. Why, I could get you into Brantley. I work with a lot of their students."
Daisy had never heard of Brantley, but already she didn't like it. And she didn't like Cal's smile, which struck her now as feverish and avid, a smile of hunger. On the 15th of April, they entered Donnie in a public school, and they stopped his tutoring lessons. Donnie fought both decisions bitterly. Cal, surprisingly enough, did not object. He admitted he'd made no headway with Donnie and said it was because Donnie was emotionally disturbed. Donnie went to his new school every morning, plodding off alone with his head down. He did his assignments and he earned average grades, but he gathered no friends, joined no clubs. There was something exhausted and defeated about him. The first week in June, during final exams, Donnie vanished. He simply didn't come home one afternoon, and no one at school remembered seeing him. The police were reassuring, and for the first few days they worked hard. They combed Donnie's sad, messy room for clues. They visited Miriam and Cal. But then they started talking about the number of kids who ran away every year, hundreds just in this city. "He'll show up if he wants to," they said. "If he doesn't, he won't." Evidently, Donnie didn't want to. It's been 3 months now, and still no word. Matt and Daisy still look for him in every crowd of awkward, heartbreaking teenage boys. Every time the phone rings, they imagine it might be Donnie. Both parents have aged. Donnie's sister seems to be staying away from home as much as possible. At night, Daisy lies awake and goes over Donnie's life. She is trying to figure out what went wrong, where they made their first mistake. Often she finds herself blaming Cal, although she knows he didn't begin it. Then at other times she excuses him, for without him, Donnie might have left earlier. Who really knows? In the end, she can only sigh and search for a cooler spot on the pillow. As she falls asleep, she occasionally glimpses something in the corner of her vision. It's something fleet and round, a ball, a basketball. It flies up. It sinks through the hoop, descends, lands in a yard littered with last year's leaves, and striped with bars of sunlight as white as bones, bleached and parched and cleanly picked.